festival has been the subject of case studies in Harvard Business School for many years as cultural entrepreneur.
Being a dropout is very fashionable these days. So you were way ahead of your time.
I wasn't a dropout in the sense I didn't drop out. I was dropped out.
Dropped out, okay.
Non-fiction is like non-veg. It's a very, very vague word. Real spirituality, you have to wrestle with yourself. There is so much fraud material being sold in that field. I don't know. I wrote this on a phone, actually. 200 words a day
also.
Even those who we call illiterate are not illiterate. They have an oral tradition. They have thousands of years of literature in memory, in their understanding.
Why are so many Indians have done so well? You know, Google, Sundar Pichai, and Microsoft, Satya Nadella, and so many others. And the answer all which I can relate to is that US men are Indians, they mind their own business.
I do feel that my success as a writer comes from a certain irreverence of the system.
Namita, welcome. Super excited to have you on.
Wonderful to be with you.
Thank you. And I'm glad you could make time for this. See, I've gotten to know about you, your work, and Jaipur Lit Fest about 3 years ago. That's the first time I visited JLF. I've of course heard about JLF a lot. Somehow, you know, as a book lover, I think I wanted to go, but never got an opportunity. But my first time there, I was absolutely blown away. You know, such a vibrant setting. And to see so many fellow, you know, book lovers in one place, you know, whole place was crowded. And I didn't realize, you know, you get some of the best authors from all parts of India and all over the world. So, I mean, it's really a gem and something, you know, country should be really proud of. So I want to start there. How did, you know, JLF journey begin? You know, how did it come to be from, I'm sure it was like a startup once upon a time. And now it is, from what I understand, is probably the largest and most loved book festival in the world. You know, what an incredible journey. So tell us, you know, a bit more about how this whole thing start.
Well, it began in a combination of synchronicity and accident.
Mm-hmm. You know, like nothing, most startups.
You don't, I mean, who, if you had told me 20 years ago that I'd be sitting here having this conversation, I would have been very skeptical. But I'm a believer. And I'm taking you back in time a little bit. This was in 2006, that we had the first edition of the precursor of the Jaipur Literature Festival, which was with the Virasat Foundation in Jaipur. But what had led to this is very interesting, because I had helped the ICCR, the Indian Council of Cultural Relations, to put up what was the first International Festival of Indian Literature. I don't know if it was the first, but we called it the first, in Neemrana. And also in Delhi. And at that time, Mukesh, I realized something which was very disturbing for me, which was that the Indian languages were more or less neglected in our own assessment of our own literature. That was a time when English was riding high. Our friend Salman Rushdie had written an introduction to a book where he had said, oh, nothing much of value in the Indian languages. Khushwant Singh, very, very dear to me, had written somewhere, there's no vocabulary in the Indian languages. And the Indian, because the English writers were getting dollar advances, doing well. Indian writers, they weren't so savvy with media. So there was, in one side, resentment from the Indian languages, and there was disdain or condescension from the English. Not everywhere. I mean, I think Vikram Seth has a great understanding of Indian literature, but duriyan thi. They were not close to each other. And a thought struck me that when the Indian languages are talking to each other and treating English as another Indian language, which it is, yeah. We have the largest population of English speakers anywhere in the world.
Is that true?
Of course.
Wow.
Maybe not as a first language, but maybe as a first language. But it is enormous.
That's incredible, you know, it's worth
remembering. And more and more of them are owning up to the language and making it their own.
Right.
So these distances, I said to myself, that when these distances are bridged, then we can look at the concept of many languages, one literature. All our literatures coming together. Then we are somewhere. And the root of it is translation. And today it's happened. So that was my vision behind the Neemrana Literature Festival, which led to the
Jaipur
Literature.
Well, that idea is, I mean, that's quite incredible to look at, you know, that one is creating a festival which is going to in some ways do justice to and represent, you know, the diversity of Indian languages and very rich heritage of, you know, literature. See, growing up in school, I grew up in a small town in Haridwar and, you know, studying Hindi in school. Well, all this read about all these authors, you know, which are from 50, you know, 70 years ago, Munshi Premchand, yes, and Jai Shankar Prasad and so on. And we'll think like that was a golden era of, you know, Hindi literature. But abhi kuch nahi dikhta tha, right? So abhi, you know, with the festival, you know, I think you said 22 languages are represented and we get a lot of participation from all these languages. I also like how you put it, you know, that in some ways, English is also now one of our own. I think of English, one of 22 languages is a great framing and probably the right way to look, because we have, in some ways, we use this phrase, English now. Like we have, you know, yes, Indianized English to a very large extent.
It belongs to us.
Right.
But, you know, they say a language is a dialect with an army and a navy. So really, there's a power structure behind everything. The economics of a nation, the Shakespeare's genius, and Queen Elizabeth I, and that moment in British history, there was lots happening between all those things. Similarly, in India, I mean, we have a huge population, a literate population, a lot of them. Even those who we call illiterate are not illiterate. They have an oral tradition. They have thousands of years of literature in memory, in their understanding. The Mahabharata and the Ramayana bring every part of India together. So we have a huge, huge, huge living literary heritage. And once we accept all of it, which I think is happening, so I think it's the energy of Indian literary culture and also our openness, in fact, our eagerness to learn from other literatures.
That's amazing. I mean, each dialect has a army and navy with it, you know, similar to pen is mightier than sword in some ways, right?
And, you know, when you're saying 22 languages, we are talking about the official languages plus English. But we have to think of the dialects, the mother tongues.
Yeah.
So this time we had Santhali writers, we had Gond writers. Mm-hmm. The tribal heritage of India is enormous, the Adivasi writing. And that's also finding voice. Kyunki when you are able to tell your own story, it is the most empowering thing in the world.
I mean, I'm quite intrigued, Namita. I mean, I know you are a prolific writer and we'll come back to, you know, your writing. But I can already see that you have a lot of interest in the huge diversity of Indian literature, culture, heritage. In some ways also see as a one continuum.
Of course.
You, it's not about, you know, just literature is just one genre, but everything else is different. Like, it's like one seamless thing, including oral traditions.
Yes, and languages and the history of those literatures. Because literature is never by itself. It's a seashore which retreats, returns. We are all a part of that infinite horizon of that. For example, if I can divert a little, but we're coming back to the circularity of literature. You know, long, long ago, there's a language which was very popular in India, which was known as Paishachi, jo Bhut Bhasha.
Okay.
And the Katha Sarit Sagar was first written there as Brihat Katha by Gunadhya.
Yeah.
And then Somdev wrote it as Katha Sarit Sagar. Then the Arabian Nights took from it. It traveled. These stories have traveled. Similarly, the Panchatantra has traveled around the world and has traveled back to India. So, and another thing is that in this literary diversity, I'm trying to explain the spirit behind the Jaipur Literature Festival. That in Kalidas, Sanskrit and Prakrit were both represented. In Shakuntala, the charioteer talks in Prakrit. And the king talks in Sanskrit. So, it was all there. High art, low art. Yeah. As it was in Shakespeare. You know, this constant multiplicity of voices in India, which we accept, is the greatness of literature everywhere.
Incredible. And aapko jo purana Indian literature ke bare mein itni jyada jankari hai, आप लाइक रेगुलरली पढ़ते हैं, रिसर्च करते हैं, लाइक हाउ डू यू हैव सो मच नॉलेज कि कालिदास ने कौन सी लैंग्वेज?
कालिदास क्योंकि मैंने एक किताब लिखी थी शकुंतला, नॉट अबाउट दैट शकुंतला, अनदर शकुंतला इन दोज डेज, बट ये थोड़ा अपनी नॉलेज है, थोड़ी बड़े दिग्गजों की बातें सुन के सीखा है. Just things that interest me, they stick to me.
Yeah, speaking of Diggaj, you know, Jaipur Lit Fest mein pretty much anyone who's anybody in the world of literature ends up coming there one year or another, right? I mean, that's also an incredible feat to get, you know, all these best-selling authors from all around the world. You know, they still make it a point to show up at JLF.
Because they love the festival.
Yeah.
It's not the power of the festival, it's the spirit. I'll tell you one story about the festival which will explain to you the dynamics. Many years ago, Arunabh Sinha, who is a very well-known translator and gives one of our people who gives ideas, he said, Namita, there's this writer called Manoranjan Byapari who writes in Bangla, but he doesn't speak any English and his Hindi is poor. You want to call him? His biography is coming out. I said, of course, because we've got our own simultaneous process of translation. We don't have the mechanics, but we frame it in the way ki multilingual conversation, the sense of it, the thought of it gets conveyed. Now, he was born in Bangladesh as a Hindu, came here, Dalit, did something, I don't know what, that landed him in jail. Jail was a great boon for him. He learned to read and write. Then he came out, he was driving a rickshaw, pulling ujwale. In Calcutta, I don't know, driving or pulling.
Yeah.
And
Calcutta, the pulling wale hote the
special private. Oh, no, mujhe to pulling bataya tha. And Mahashweta Devi was sitting in. He asked her about something she had written.
Achha.
She was surprised that he's asking. He's turned out he was a great reader. She said, why don't you write something? He wrote it, she published it. Now, he came to Jaipur. He was recognized for his talent there. Many. So he got a literary agent, many publishers came to him. His books have been translated into 8 languages. He's been a runner-up in the JCB Prize twice. I mean, this has happened before my eyes, that he has become a literary star. Why? Because there were no gatekeepers.
Right.
He was just a talent. Not every talent can make it, but his talent made it. Again, luck, synergy, genuine. It's not just about the big stars. It's about...
Understood.
And anybody who can make it, who has that spark.
Right. And was that an effort to, you know, unearth all these authors from all these, you know, 22 language plus dialects? Because they're also not necessarily very visible. Something, you know, you will see in the newspaper, etc. So how did you in JLF, you know, build that network of all these authors, you know, which is truly representing, you know, what India is all about?
It happens organically. We have 2 advisors across Rajasthan because Rajasthan itself has such a rich oral heritage. Mm. And for me, it's very easy to divide India literate, illiterate. Mm. But the illiterate sometimes know as much, if not more, than surface literate.
Yeah.
And the oral literature of Rajasthan is so enormous. There are ballads, there are stories. Uska, we tried very hard. We always try very hard to present that. Then the Sahitya Academy, we go to them for inspiration. They do very good work. Then, you know, each 2 writers, 3 writers that you know, they come up with, Namita ji, iska dekhiye, inka kaam dekhiye, inka kaam dekhiye. So we get spontaneously access to these people.
That's amazing. I think, you know, what... And JLF is doing for the, you know, literature and also for culture of India is outstanding. It's just going from strength to strength. I know, like, now the festival has even gone to many parts of the world.
Many
you guys have a full calendar. I want to talk a bit about that.
You
know, both the idea behind, you know, why to take it into Europe, you know, to America, and what's the inspiration behind taking there and what kind of reception you get in those countries?
It just happened on its own. There were people who'd come to the festival, who loved the festival. And they suggested to us, it was suggested we bring the festival to London. We did it in the South Bank. Then we've been doing it 10 years now at the British Library. And we get audiences which are very, they know that, okay, June, there'll be a festival. They watch out for it. These are both diasporic Indian writers, Indian, not only Indian, South Asian, mm-hmm. Pakistanis, Bangladeshis, Sri Lankans, Nepali people. Mm-hmm. There's a common literary footprint around all these. Because, so they come, and international audiences come. So that's London. Then Boulder, mm-hmm. somebody from Boulder, Colorado came and said, we want to do it there. I have a good instinct. Uh-huh. And I told Sanjay, this will happen. And I couldn't even imagine Boulder, right. Colorado. Correct. But Sanjay went there, visited, uh-huh. and somehow that festival has been going on and on. Mm-hmm. It is my favorite festival, yeah. all the festivals in the world, wow. that we do. Right. Boulder has the highest per square mile population of Nobel laureates anywhere in the world.
Incredible.
Or something like
that. Wow.
It's a very learned city. Mm. And it's a very liberal city. But we also have festivals in Houston. Mm. We have festivals in New York.
Right.
This year we are going to Seattle. Mm. Seattle should be of special interest to you techie types.
Right.
But it's there.
Yeah. No, so is Boulder. I think we'll talk about mountains later. I know, like, you are super inspired. But I can imagine a Boulder with all these Nobel Prize winners surrounded with mountains, reading books, PhDs, having intellectuals.
It's a very gentle place. But we also have very regular sessions in Australia, in the past in Melbourne and in Adelaide and in different parts there. We've had one in Qatar, in Doha.
Yeah. It's so inspiring. I think, you know, it's not...
Spain. And I have to tell. Sure. This is the most exciting. Okay. Last year, we had a session, a festival in Madrid and then Valladolid, which is a beautiful town, very learned again, university town in Spain, not far from Madrid. And it was in English and Spanish and some Sanskrit. So we broke out of the... trope of only English.
Amazing. See, I have to tell you, Namita, I think this conversation and what you are doing at JLF is, you know, it's really inspiring for me, you know, for two reasons, you know. One is, I personally, you know, always love books. Like, for me, you know, books have been like my closest friends. I kind of discovered books in my late teens, and now it's been 30 years, you know, I read voraciously. But there's a caveat which I need to fix going forward. लेकिन मेरे को नॉन फिक्शन की आदत लग गई है यू नो मैं बहुत सारा नॉन फिक्शन पढ़ता हूँ साइंस हिस्ट्री यू नो पॉलिटिक्स सोशल साइंस ये वो बायोग्राफीज एंड सो ऑन फिक्शन अभी तक बहुत कम किया बट आई थिंक फिक्शन यू नो आई डू वांट टू लाइक फिक्शन सम वेज यू नो रियल ह्यूमन स्टोरीज यू नो कम आउट इन दैट
इट विल हैपन इन इट्स ओन टाइम देयर इज अ टाइम इन योर माइंड व्हेन यू आर रेडी टू टेक इन स्टोरीज देयर इज अ टाइम इन योर माइंड व्हेन यू आर कीन टू लर्न एंड गेट टू द हार्ट ऑफ इट डोंट ट्रीट फिक्शन लाइक अ चोर इट विल रन आफ्टर यू छोड़ नहीं पाएंगे
एंड दैट हैपेंस एवरी टाइम आई पिक अप अ फिक्शन बुक मतलब आई एंजॉयड फाइव टाइम्स मोर देन अ नॉन फिक्शन बुक मतलब बंद ही नहीं कर पाता राइट यू नो सो
अलग अलग समय में अलग अलग चीजें सब बट आई कुड जस्ट क्लैरिफाई दैट आई एम नॉट रिस्पॉन्सिबल फॉर द जयपुर लिटरेचर फेस्टिवल देयर इज थ्री ऑफ अस देयर इज द प्रोड्यूसर संजय रॉय हु नोज बुक्स अंडरस्टैंड्स बुक्स बट इज ऑल्सो अ वेरी डीप थिएटर पर्सन सो एंड हिज कंपनी टीम वर्क हैज ग्रेट ऑर्गेनाइजेशनल जीनियस टू द एक्सटेंड दैट आवर फेस्टिवल has been the subject of case studies in Harvard Business School for many years as cultural entrepreneurship. Right. And there's my co-director, William Dalrymple, who he and I share the same instinct, but very different canvases. Mm. He, historian, knows a lot about art and is well entrenched in the Western world while knowing a lot about Indian history. My canvas is different and more erratic. Ki jahan bhi man chala gaya. So...
Right, so you like to explore and...
We all like to explore. Right. So it's the three of us.
Right.
And the combination of our different perspectives and our trust in each other and our support of each other. And 17 years for this three-legged stool to hold together.
Three legs provide, you know, really good balance. Two legs, you know, much harder to balance. But see, look, this whole JLF story is, you know... See, a lot of what we in this podcast we do, we talk to a lot of entrepreneurs. We discuss entrepreneur story. But I'm seeing, you know, so much parallel... It's, you know, started with an initial idea, inspiration, some conviction. It took its own journey. I'm sure there were some ups and downs also along the way. 20 years down the line, it has become probably much bigger than anyone ever thought because, you know, that's keep kept getting better. There was genuine passion and interest in, you know, building something. So time was right. I feel, India mein, I think pichle 20 saal mein kafi sea change hua. I think you know where you started ki 20 saal pehle it was almost a matter of pride ki English use karna hai, Western lagna hai. See, one thing I've already mentioned, I think it's podcast once, but I'll mention again ki आपको याद होगा 30 साल पहले शादी में लोग सब सूट पहन के आते थे, राइट? इट वाज अ बिग थिंग को शादी हो रही तो सूट सिलवाना है, टाई लगा के जाना है. हमने इंडिया में यूपी में छोटे शहर में सूट टाई की क्या जरूरत है? अभी लग सब लोग शेरवानी पहन के जाते हैं, कुर्ता पजामा पहन के जाते हैं. लेकिन थिंग्स हैव चेंज बिकॉज सी एज इंडियन डूइंग वेल इकोनॉमिकली वी आर ऑल्सो डिस्कवरिंग हु वी आर, वेयर वी कम फ्रॉम, वट इज आवर ओरिजिनल वॉइस. एंड दिस वेयर आई थिंक लिटरेचर इज अ ह्यूज रोल टू प्ले, स्पेशली सेलिब्रेटिंग यू नो डाइवर्सिटी ऑफ इंडियन लिटरेचर, विच इज वेयर. सो आई थिंक JLF ऑल्सो instead of helping develop the consciousness of the country, right, which I think all of us are Indian also seeking. You know, we can't just keep looking westward and seeking, you know, how should our worldview, ideology should be shaped. Like, we have so much tradition, history, you know, when which can be only be told through literature in many ways.
So I think what you said, there are two or three keywords. Mm-hmm. You said celebrating literature. Yeah. And I really think that India and South Asia is a celebratory culture. Mm-hmm. Whatever we do with joy. Right. And it's that joy that brings in the special quality of the Lit Fest. A lot of my dear friends from around the world have said that in some of the major festivals, very learned festivals, boodhe, buzurg log aate hain. But in Jaipur, it's young people and they're brighter than the brightest. So that's a very important part of it. And the other thing is a lot of the diaspora who comes from across, they come to Jaipur for 2-3 days. To rediscover what is almost a cross section of India. You just, if every time there are 4 or 5 sessions going on, if you look at the range of those sessions, you see so many different aspects.
100%. I can vouch for it. Right now, I've been to JLF last 3 years in a row. And yeah, it's packed with youngsters, you know, a lot of people in their 20s, and they seem to be having great time. And you know, going, running from session to session.
They're like an energy machine. They pump out energy.
That's right. Yeah,
and
yeah.
The other thing is that the Jaipur Literature Festival has helped to forge a literary community.
Right.
Our authors meet authors from other worlds.
Yeah.
And those people also meet. Mm-hmm. And the world is actually just a small town, you know.
Right.
It's not such a chota sa to planet.
Thodi
bhasha hai usme.
Right.
We need to come together as humans, sharing our stories, because we've got to remember that language was the first and greatest evolutionary tool.
Right.
I don't know if birds have languages, but it hasn't helped them evolve too much. I mean, their language. But here, everything is shared consciousness because of language.
That's right.
What, and even understanding our own thoughts because of language.
Right.
So language is the most primary tool, and every religion accepts that. In the beginning was the word, you know, it's so words and stories and each other's stories and each other's narratives.
Yeah.
That is what brings us together.
100%. And look, language definitely, you know, what enabled us to collaborate and societies evolved, have, you know, shared context and all of that. But what's even more fascinating is now, even, you know, the cutting edge of AI, we are coming out, say, today, you know, not going too much into detail, but this whole idea of a large language model on which ChatGPT is based, it's basically we are able to, you know, mimic human intelligence just by processing language.
Absolutely.
So, like, there's such a deeper connection between language and, you know, our intelligence.
And our basic intelligence is language.
Yeah, yeah.
So, and even the AI, I mean, I'm not afraid of AI. I'm cautious like everybody else, but watching excitedly, hoping in my lifetime, I'm not a young woman, I see all these changes that are coming.
Yeah.
Because I feel with AI, somewhere we'll return to a mass shared consciousness.
That's
like,
right.
I'm not afraid of AI-inspired stories because they come from our stories.
Stories, that's right. 100%. I think it's very fascinating time and evolving very fast.
It's time of mass dreaming.
That's right.
Yeah. Almost.
Yeah. 100%. I want to take you back to, you know, early days of your career. I think I was reading in your biography that you started this magazine when you were 16.
No.
That
older.
You were, okay, what?
19. 20.
Okay, it's still almost a teenager, right? Which is, you know, that must be, I'm guessing, probably late 60s, early 70s.
No. Okay, I'll give you the whole timeline.
Okay, tell me.
It's a chronology. So, I was born in 56. and born in Republic Day.
Yeah.
I was named Republica. Phir naam badal diya. And I studied English literature and loved English literature, truly, but loved literature. And when I was in college, in Jesus Mary College, we had a course on Chaucer. And I realized there was an alternative paper called Paper 8B, I still remember, on modern Indian literature, which nobody was doing.
Yeah.
And usme you had to study Hindi literature in that time. Now there are many such courses, but there was only this one in Delhi University. Mm-hmm. And I remember there was Mohan Rakesh, there was Vaishali Ki Nagar Vadhu, there were some books, there were some... And my spoken Hindi was good, my written Hindi was very poor. But I said, I want to do this paper. So I tried to find out the paperwork, it was not clear. Mm-hmm. The nun was both a friend of mine and extra strict with me. Mm-hmm. So in the end, even though I had been in the topping Delhi University on and off, but when I went to fill in my paper for 8B, she said, you can't do it because you don't have attendance for it.
Mm. Attendance?
For that paper. That I said, but how can I have it? No, they're not teaching it.
Yeah.
I was short of 0.6% attendance. Mm. There's a very famous case where almost 140 students of JMC were held back for shortage of attendance.
Wow.
And those days, you know, there was 10% discretion with the principal. Mm. She didn't use it. And we went to court. And in fact, Arun Jaitley was our lawyer. He was a young lawyer at that time. My father-in-law was a law minister. Emergency aa gayi. Underground. It was aise ups and downs. Ki unhone kaha, you'll have to repeat the year.
Mm.
I said, I'm not repeating it.
This was in your final year.
So sorry. I said, I'm not doing it.
Right.
Most people repeated it. Mm. So I'm confessing to you that I am not. I've given the paper.
See, being a dropout is very fashionable these days. So you were fashionable way ahead of your time.
I wasn't a dropout in the sense I didn't drop out. Right. I was dropped out.
Dropped out, okay. Yeah.
But I could have gone back.
Well, then sometimes greatness is thirst upon you. So
really, I do feel that my success as a writer
comes
from a certain irreverence of the system. If I wanted to be a professor.
Mm.
If I'd been a professor, I would have written very boring academic books.
Mm.
I'm not saying my books are better or worse, but I have more fun writing.
Right. So you were dropped out because of 0.6% delta in attendance?
Because I wanted to do modern Indian literature. So everything is a vindication of that, that today I'm sitting in a system where modern Indian literature translations are more important than anything else.
That's amazing. I mean, this is roughly, let's say, 45 or so years ago, you were kind of, you faced resistance in your college because you wanted to do modern Indian literature. And here you are, part of this such massive festival, which is celebrating modern Indian literature in basically it's all its avatar and all its,
but
colorful, vibrancy.
Please remember, we are one of many festivals.
Of course.
Across, what is most joyous is that this idea has been picked up across India.
Right.
Small towns have competing festivals.
Mm.
I'm from Uttarakhand.
Right.
And there's people who are running festivals in small villages because people are hungry to read, to expand their horizons. And, television, Netflix, all these, they are passive entertainment.
Right.
They're also great, but they don't test your brain.
Right.
They don't challenge you to make your own interpretation.
No, absolutely. And as a reader, I realize, you can actually almost have a dialogue with a book.
Yes.
You read something and then some thought triggers, then you can pause.
Yes.
And you can indulge in the thought, in the Netflix, the things are happening so fast. You're just consuming sitting dead duck in front,
And also, the writer is giving you space to draw your own conclusions, to share his or her conclusions. But a film is engineered or wired differently to say, ab inko rulao.
Right,
ab inko smile karo, which is great. I mean, it's great. I'm not getting
they're getting too
language
modern.
Of films. But I think books, that, and I'm an obsessive watcher of films and things. So I don't even have a TV anywhere near me.
Right.
I don't watch anything.
So let's go back to after being dropped out. So you started your magazine around that 1920, right? Which is, again, a very bold move. And that you, I think, already mentioned that was before around emergency time, very turbulent times in India. Almost forced to, dropped out of college. And
मुझे आज से जिद आ गई, नहीं मैं नहीं पढ़ना है, आप लोग पढ़ो, पढ़ाओ, सिखाओ. आई एम नॉट कमिंग बैक टू कॉलेज बिकॉज आई एम वेरी, आई मीन आई डिडंट फील लाइक डूइंग इट अगेन. सो इट वाज मे बी नॉट अ वाइज मूव, बट
आई थिंक इट वर्क आउट वेल. सो देयर आर डेफिनेटली वाइज मूव, बट आई एम मोर इंटरेस्टेड इन कि यू
आफ्टर, बट देन आई वांटेड टू डू समथिंग एंड सो द आइडिया केम अप डूइंग अ फिल्म मैगजीन. सो वी स्टार्टेड, आई वाज, दिस वाज इन 1977 that we started it. So I would have been 21.
Right. But emergency chalu ho gaya tha
almost. But my father-in-law, you have to remember, I was part of the privileged power structure, though we were resisting it, me and my husband. It was not something we believed in. But I've always grown up in New Delhi and in its comfort and protection of itself. But I started this magazine in... when was it? We began it mid-77.
Acha.
That we brought this together. And I said, I want to do a different sort of magazine. It was called Super. And I was, Rauf Ahmed was our editor. And he was 28. And 28 seemed like, what an old man we brought in.
Yeah.
And all the staff was very young. And I'm still in touch with many of them. And it was a vibrant young magazine, which looked... not just, it looked at gossip, because gossip is a very serious genre. And Shobha Day was already demonstrating her genius almost with Stardust. But ours was a little more, it was different. And it ran for 7 years. It did very, very well. But then somehow we could not sustain it. So you could say somewhere I'm an entrepreneur at heart, because I was not the editor of that magazine. I was the publisher. And I was behind the scenes. So that was my first entrepreneurial kick, the buzz you get out of watching an idea. You say, I want to do this. As far as, I mean, you're a big entrepreneur, but in my, minuscule way, I would say it comes to taking an idea, to breaking it into its components, is how I look at it.
And looking back at some of these things also, they're precursor to, you know, what's to come. I think you're also the... finding yourself, like, you know, in the early 20s, having the courage to start your own thing, running through 7 years, despite the privilege, you know, there is also not about finances, also about what will other people think. Absolutely. What will the family think?
Yes, I mean, ki, dekho, itna padh ke abhi se film magazine shuru kari. Yeah. But it was a very good magazine. So now I want to ask you a question, because I'm deeply interested in your story. I'm on, and I see you as a serial entrepreneur, that it's not just what you're doing, why you're doing it, but it's the same excitement of the entrepreneurial spirit. So I want you to tell me about your journey as an entrepreneur, but not just the linear journey. What is an entrepreneur? Who is an entrepreneur? Why are you an entrepreneur?
Dekhiye, my entrepreneur journey, you know, I think the seed was sowed when I was in college. So I started reading at the time. And I read these two books, one by Sam Walton, Made in America. One is Akio Morita, who is Sony's founder. I think Made in Japan, something like that. And this idea of, you know, here are these people who in their, I think, in their 30s had an idea. They started something in one store. Sony used to sell some electronics, you know, so back-end machines. And in their lifetime, they built this, you know, giant corporation, which eventually became the number one in their field, and it's such massive impact. So that, you know, the at least romantic idea of entrepreneurship was born. Ki mereko lage mereko to yahi karna eventually. Pahla job was in a big company. Huh?
So can I ask you, interrupt?
Sure.
Would you say that somewhere every entrepreneur is a dreamer?
Oh, 100%, you know. And I think you have to have some dream that you believe in. Aapko kuch pata nahi ko kaise hoga, kab hoga, aapka na resources hai, na skill set hai. But wo dream... इतना विविड रियल लगता है. एंड आई एम प्रीटी श्योर ऑथर्स का वैसे ही होता होगा ना, कि वो बुक्स के बारे में एटलीस्ट स्टार्ट्स विद अ विजन,
यू एंड यू एंटर दैट विजन जस्ट लाइक एन एंड यू, इट्स वेरी पेनफुल टू पुट एवरीथिंग इन वर्ड्स, जस्ट लाइक फॉर यू इट्स वेरी पेनफुल आई एम श्योर टू आयरन आउट ऑल द डिटेल्स.
करेक्ट करेक्ट करेक्ट.
सो टेल अस मोर अबाउट द एंटरप्रेन्योर.
हाँ, तो उस वक्त जब सीड वॉज बॉर्न एंड उसको पता नहीं था कि कब कैसे करना है. माई फर्स्ट जॉब वॉज अ बिग कंपनी विच आई डिडंट लाइक. 99 mein this whole Silicon Valley was, you know, the dot-com boom was in full swing. और वहाँ पे शिकागो में बैठे हम लोग को लग रहा था कि यू नो जस्ट मिसिंग आउट कि हमारा बिगेस्ट रिवोल्यूशन ऑफ 20th सेंचुरी हमारे सामने हो रहा है और हम दूर से देख रहे हैं. तो आई क्विट माई जॉब, ड्रोव टू सिलिकॉन वैली, ट्राई टू स्टार्ट ए कंपनी. उसको बिल्कुल पता नहीं था, तो कुछ हुआ नहीं. बट फिर 7-8 साल वहाँ पर काम किया इन स्टार्टअप्स एंड आई लर्न अ लॉट. 2007 में इंडिया आके इन्वेंटर स्टार्ट किया.
वाओ, सो देयर इज अ फॉलो अप क्वेश्चन टू दिस. Why and how is it? What's the reason behind the almost a genius of Indian minds in helping Silicon Valley find its own story?
Yeah. See, Abhin, I was at an event recently. It was basically more of an India-US collaboration. And somebody asked this question to, you know, somebody else on stage, ki, how, why are so many Indians have done so well? You know, Google, Sundar Pichai, and Microsoft, Satya Nadella, and so many others. And the answer was, which I can relate to, is that US men, Indians, they mind their own business. They are not nosy about, which is, you know, I think I've seen a little bit, you know, see, one is, first of all, in some ways, people who had a really good education, and in some way filtered already in the Indian system, they end up going to US. So you're already privileged in some ways, knowledge-wise, opportunity-wise, education-wise. Second thing, it is true. I think, you know, we as Indians, I think, are able to really focus on something, stay it for a long period of time, not get too involved. See, if you look at the typical, you know, the image of a US, the American CEO, typically, you know, tend to be loud, very much about themselves, like very, you know, becomes a cult personality of one person. But look at Indian CEOs, they are very subdued. You know, like Sundar Pichai said, they talk to you so widely, very low-key. It's never about themselves. Partly, I think, depending on our heritage of as a collectivist culture, where for all of us, family, society, culture, tribe is something more important. Yes. Which I think, so if you have the intellectual caliber, ambition, and ability to get along with and take a lot of people together, I think was really well. So I think combination of all these, I think today it's, so many stats, there are nearly 35-40% of all startups in Silicon Valley are started by, you know, Indian founders and so on. It is incredible. I think this impact is only going to grow in the coming decades.
That's fascinating and deserves a whole session by itself, which we will talk about all the time. Of cultural entrepreneurship, technological entrepreneurship, empathy, all we'll talk later.
100%. I think there is, you know, I think you've brought up a topic which I deeply care about. My whole career has been around entrepreneurship, but I do see, Amitabh, I've also seen the entrepreneurship is an idea which shows up in any act of creation.
Yes.
I think it does not matter whether it's a festival or a book, magazine, you know, or many things you've done, right? So I think sometimes also people connect entrepreneur too much with the for-profit company creation. No. I think it could be cultural movement and so on. There's a lot to learn from that, and then going through, you know, your journey and things you have done, I see, you know, as an entrepreneur, as any other entrepreneur, you've created so many things all your life.
I see it as excitement, energy, and also process.
Right,
you have to love process.
Right.
Once I was told by an engineering friend that engineering is about process.
Yeah.
And I think storytelling is also about process.
Right.
Or breaking it down, telling it into
timelines,
into...
Right.
So, yes.
So, let's go back to, you know, you were talking about, you know, your magazine, building experience. Do you, any key learnings from that phase, you know, from your, in your 20s, you were doing this magazine about Bollywood movies. I don't know if you did from Delhi or you moved to Mumbai for that. Any key
between
learnings?
Bombay and Delhi? Well, I think because we had a small group of people. There was Rao, who sadly left the world. There's so many others there who still remain friends. It was about understanding the group energy of talented young people working together. That was the most joyous part of it.
Yeah.
And after that, it was also because I'd been chucked out of college because of Mr. Chaucer and the watching what was happening in the linguistic framework of those days. Salman Rushdie had just written Midnight's Children, where he had written it in a very authentic language of Bombay.
Yeah.
It owned up to that language. And even somebody like Shobha Day was playing around with language in Stardust. So when I wrote my first novel, Paro, because when this magazine shut down, I said, ab kya kare? So I said, ab novel likhni chahiye.
Right.
And until then, I was writing short stories and poetry, which was horrible. When I look, thank God, none of it is around. But I was trying to live up to this intellectual self that had so abruptly been cut short with the being thrown out of college or whatever, or walking out of college, whatever you may call it. So then, this is the first time I felt liberated enough to write a story in a free-flowing way. And, using phrases which brought in Indian English quite unself-consciously.
Right. And I was, The Sparrow is right here. This was your first book. I think you were 26 or so.
I was 26 when I wrote it and 28 when it was published. And it has been in print for 40 years. And I'll tell you something which has got me very excited is that Penguin India, one of my publishers, who they are bringing it out as a modern classic. So for a book to survive for 40 years, it's a mystery, especially a comedy. This was a social comedy. It shocked everybody because sexually it was a bit frank, but more than anything else, it was a social comedy. I remember when I wrote it, my father found the manuscript somewhere. He said, "Beta, what is this?" I said, "I'm writing a novel." Right. He said, "Child, I hope you're being discreet." I said, "Discreet? Discreet ki to mujhe spelling hi nahi pata." But it was, I'm so proud of this novel because when young people read it now, they look at me, my gray hair and this old lady. They think, "You wrote this?" Yeah, because it's still current. It survived. So, now I'm going back to history.
Sure.
But Adi Shankaracharya once said, in the context of a biography of him that had been written, he told his, Totakacharya was one of his four disciples. Totakacharya ne ek biography likhi. And he was the least intellectual of Shankaracharya's disciples. So he wanted to be very, he said, "Main bhi likhunga biography. Likhi unko, present ki un palm leaf." He said, "Bahut achha kiya, matlab." But he said, "Har kitab ki, har kahani ki kundali hoti hai. Aur iski kundali mein mujhe kuch ye dikh raha hai. Yaad rakho." And I've never forgotten, of course. I mean, he must have said it in very different words, but I've read the story. And I really believe every book has its own kundali, its own destiny. So Paro ki destiny very strong thi ki wo abhi bhi chal rahi, abhi bhi padh rahe hain. Kitni achhi kitabein hoti hain, isse kahi achhi. Which just didn't get that moment. I think that moment is when the public perception and your story match each other.
But that's, as a young author at that time, and your first book to have this kind of run is just incredible.
But I got a lot of flack in India. In India.
I'm guessing a lot of listeners might not have read, but they should read. I am going to read for sure. But thoda bataiye ki, this book
is Paro was a very, I thought it was just a very funny book. And I wanted to move on to other books. And I look back, it's well structured, it's good. I was very lucky because my husband said, "Go to London and find a publisher." Wedding anniversary present, he gave me a ticket to London. And don't come back without a publisher. But I was fortunate. I went to an agent. I went, like in 3 days, I had two big companies wanting it. It did very well. And then my career came to an end because after this book, because in India, everybody was saying, "Ye kya hai? What is this book?" You know, there was only K.K. Daruwala wrote a good review. Some people were nice. But I was treated either as a flash in the pan or what has she written? They were shocked. Ki a nice middle-class girl. How has she written such a book?
So did the society of India at that time find it little,
they found it a bit disoriented.
Bit
unconventional. So I said, "I'll impress them." So I tried to read very serious books. In fact, they were so serious, they were depressing. And nobody wanted to publish those books. And ideally, I should have gone on writing the same book, but I'm very quickly, my attention gets on. For me, every book is a journey, every book is a quest. So I wanted to explore something new. So the story I was writing was a bit depressing. It was a story called The Himalayan Love Story. So nobody wanted to publish it. So after this huge success, for 10 years, nothing I wrote got any success. Just rejection slips. So from the fairy tale beginning to one bottom of the pit. But one thing I am is persistent. I know. I just likhti gayi. And slowly, and I had a very difficult time personally at that time. I lost my husband. This book was But I kept writing. And I climbed back. Because then people said, oh, this book we like, that book we like. So my reputation built up. And I don't have a very large readership. But I do have a readership of people who read and appreciate me. Though I never, I don't have BA after my name. But there are a lot of people who have written PhD thesis on my book. So for me, each book is a different journey. So, and then I wrote this sequel to Priya. Paro, 25 years later, came out as Priya. Which, because Paro and Priya is the story of these two women, very different women. In fact, the Oberoi bookstore is also there in it. Up to Haini Ma, up to jewelry shop. But there was a, so I'm feeling we are shooting here in the Oberoi. And it was about Delhi in those days. And it captures a moment in time. And that moment in time captures the, imagination of current readers also. So who can tell? Essay, I wrote a book called Things to Leave Behind, which got the Sahitya Academy Award. So that was a very precious book for me because it was about, I'm a Kumaoni, and it was about the history of Kumaon. My great-grandfather had written a book called The History of Kumaon, B.D. Pandey. And I'd always passionately loved the landscape of the Himalayas. So that book was the serious book that gave me another sort of attention. But each book is so different that it's very difficult to almost say the same. The style is the same. I have a slightly bizarre sense of humor which comes through. Otherwise, each book is different. But now I've written 23 books, out of which a lot of fiction, a lot of myth, and lot in the Himalayas. But itni kitabein likhne ke baad, I can see some patterns that, okay, so all my books have this element of this mad woman coming in somewhere. All my books look like my latest book, which is here, it's called Never Never Land. I don't know, I wrote this on a phone actually. 200 words a day also. Because I just wrote it too. I say, I can't stop writing.
So phone can be for use for something good as well.
I managed it. And then, when now I'm reading it again, because I when I read it again, I realized that the two characters in Paro, which are Paro and Priya, here also there are two ladies. One is almost beyond, in her mid-90s, and one is 102.
Wow.
And but they are the same characters.
Same characters.
I mean, the same type of personalities with the same dynamics between them. So, you never know, human mind, we are all the time trying to process our experience
and to share it. You mentioned persistence, right? I think it's 45 years you've been writing continuously, culminating these 23 books. And earlier you were mentioning you have few more book ideas in your head. Just maybe talk a bit more about the process. You know, how does an idea take hold in your head? When do you know ki ab to likhna hai iske bare mein book? And what process you go through? Does it, is there a research phase? Or, you know, how do you commit to writing? And then you just mentioned 200 words a day. No, what does your process look
200
like?
200 is the bare minimum. If you can manage that, anybody can bring a book out. Because I believe, first of all, that everybody has two books inside. One is the life they lived. And one is the life they might have lived.
Might. Incredible.
And when you write about the life you've lived, it becomes a sort of scrutiny, very deep scrutiny of your own life. So even if it's not published, your life script makes you a more grown-up person because you sort of figure out, I did this wrong. Perhaps I shouldn't have done that. It's a deep self-analysis. Though you may give it to another character or another person, you will think that you're writing about somebody else. And the second sort of story, which is about is the dreaming mind, the adventures. Maybe there's somebody who's never left their small town. But they, in their mind, they've been everywhere.
That's
their story.
So powerful. Like, you know, I want to repeat it, right? Because I'm able to resonate well, you know, just saying it. Every person has these two books inside them, right? Because I have my own unique life experience that no one will have, right? And if I zoom out and look at, like, that's an incredible, beautiful story that each of us live. And of course, all of us have unfulfilled dreams and aspirations and adventures. We either didn't get the opportunity or courage or risk, whatever it is. But there is,
it's there,
you know, imagines, you know. So which is,
so I think these are the two, and so I think everybody, for them to write their own story, their first story, And don't look at the success and all part of it. That's just luck also, persistence also, so many other things. But if you're writing that one story that examines your own life script, or writing that one story that gives you a key to your unfulfilled dreams, these are very important things.
And people can, even if they never publish, it's probably still useful to write, right?
And now the thing is that everybody can publish because of the ease of technology of publishing.
Yeah.
And there's, according to me, even if a book is shared with two people or three people, that also is very important. If your great-granddaughter can read the book, maybe. Or
there's something, look, you know, let's say, I don't know much about my great-grandparents, but imagine if they wrote down something which I can read now, it's priceless to me. Like, which people listening to this podcast can at least think about doing that.
Recording the memories of the people in your... Because everything is changing so fast, Mukesh. It looks so... pre-cell phone and post-cell phone, pre-computer and post-computer. It's a different sort of AD and BC kind of thing. CE, whatever you want to call these transitions. But these stories, we are each other's stories. And long ago in, I'm forgetting which year was it, maybe 99 or something, I'm just bad at numbers, unlike you. I wrote this book called Mountain Echoes, Reminiscences of Kumaoni Women. And I went to my grandmother and to three great aunts, including the great writer Gaura Pant Shivani, who was related to me, and my grandmother Shakuntala Pandey and Tara Pandey, who was a famous Chayavadi poet of that time. And I found these people, they were very old, but they were very modern in their outlook. So I got them to record their memories. So oral history. And then when I wrote it, so it's across Kumaoni families, especially diaspora families, many of them have this book in their bookshelves because it gives people a... And now when people from across the world are marrying into our family, some Spanish bahu aito, usko ka, read this. Because the stories are the same around the world, and I use that as the research material for Never Things to Leave Behind. So like that, it all feeds into each other, into one mass of information. And research is so easy now.
Right. And since you mentioned, Kumayu, I'm also, that's other thing we share. I also grew up in, Uttarakhand.
Uttarakhand.
I didn't realize growing up, but later on I realized, it's love mountains. There's something called mountain, you go there and, this whole perspective changes. You start... Like most of the problems just seem to melt away and brain start operating at a very different level. And I know in a lot of your books, you have used a lot of mountain settings, mountain people, mountain culture, folk tales from that. Just talk more about that, your relationship with mountains.
Okay, so there's a line from the poet William Blake says, "Great things are done when men and mountains meet. This is not done by jostling in the street." And I think the sea has its own wisdom. It comes, it retreats. Mountains stay there. There was a Facebook post I read of this very young Pahari woman who was going through some difficulties. And she said, "Main Pahari nahi, main Pahar hoon." And I really loved that. And I like to think I'm bhi Pahar hai. And mountain communities around the world share a certain stubborn quality, is what I have found. I may be wrong. And right now, I'm working on one of the most exciting projects I have ever done. I'm doing it with my old friend, Dr. Malashree Lal, who was one of our professors in college. There's not much age difference between us. And we work seamlessly together. Mm. So this project is called Himalayan Folktales and Folklore.
Mm.
And we are trying to collect folktales from across the Himalayas.
Yeah.
Because in a while, they'll all be lost because they're in small languages. Yeah. And trying to see the themes and stories of those young minds, because those stories are more innocent in a way. But they also come from the same, what I said, Peshachi Bhasha, Brahed, Ye Kahaniya, Katha Sarit Sagar. Inhi cheezon se wo kahaniya hai, Ajatak tales. Folk tales are the same around the world. So our Mountain Folk Tales project is very, very, very exciting. Plus, there are four things I'm working on, which I won't talk about, because I really believe if you talk too much about what you're writing, this is a tip to all the writers who are watching, that if I found that if you talk too much about what you're working on, I can tell you about the folktales because they are complete. But if you talk too much about what you're writing, you expend the energy. Just don't talk about it while you're writing it. Talk about it later.
That's a good tip for aspiring writers. Really, I think those lines you quoted, the great things happen when
men and mountains meet.
It's so powerful. It's like really kind of captures the essence of what mountain does to kind of our spirits.
The Himalayas are the youngest mountains in the world.
And the tallest.
They are growing. I see them as living beings.
Yeah.
It is.
Mm-hmm. And then, this is, the way you're describing Himalayas, right? And in literature, imagination, this whole idea of mysticism, like being able to feel something, which is a little more ethereal, which is not can be described that easily. Do you think is that also feeling authors in chase?
So. One of the books I've recently completed, which has turned out to be one of my favorite books, It's called Mystics and Skeptics, Searching Himalayan Masters. Mm-hmm. And we've looked at about 24 Himalayan Masters.
Right.
It's an anthology again.
Living Himalayan Masters?
Living or dead.
Okay.
But not about their philosophy and all, but about encounters with them. What it meant to meet them. Mm. It's a very good book because it's also got skeptics.
Yeah.
Because I began the introduction to that book in a very sweet way by quoting. I have many eccentric people in my family, as you can imagine. And one of those who was also, by the way, an engineer in America, but he was also in India a lot. And he told me, he used to call me Bhagwati. He said, Bhagwati, yaad rakho, kahin bhi tumhe koi pagal mil jaye, usko izzat se baat karna, kya pata wo sakshat Bhagwan hai. So you really can't tell in all those eccentric characters moving around in the mountains, who is a madman, who is a fraud, and who is a saint. There's a lot of the real questers who are not working within the rituals only. The Himalayas draw them.
Your book, Mystics and Skeptics, is reminding me of, I don't know if you've read this autobiography of a yogi.
Yes.
They talk about this, I don't know what's it called, a character or a guruji, Babaji, which is a
growing one around him. Babaji is one of the great legendary figures who's supposed to be immortal.
Yeah.
And so many people have said they have encountered him. Over the centuries, timeless. But I believe that that figure exists and emanations of that person exist. Mm. But on the other hand, about this greatest of all Himalayan gurus, scam bhi, fraud bhi, India mein bahut hote hain.
Yes.
And I heard, and I hope I'm not disrespecting this unknown lady, but I heard that there's a certain phone number in Gurgaon, where Gurugram, where if you phone this number, there's a lady who's in direct connection with
Babaji.
And if you pay a small fee, she'll answer all your questions by asking Babaji. So, there are as many, spirituality. Real spirituality, you have to wrestle with yourself. Mm. There is so much fraud, material being sold in that field, in the psychic field, in the spiritual field, that it can really fool you and destroy your life.
So, do you think, the act of creation, especially fiction writing, involves a lot of wrestling with yourself and, kind of digging deeper and finding, partly, we look at writing as a process where you observe, you are looking at other characters, stories, and you have a way with the words, you are able to tell it. But how much is also required looking inwards and being in touch with who you truly are?
I think that's important, to be honest with yourself, and to try to be honest in your voice, because if the voice in which you are telling the story works, it means a lot. But at the same time, I really believe that in the classical theory of literature, each book anybody writes builds on the thousands of books written before them.
Shoulder of giants,
or just the lyrical voices, the structure, the genres, the themes. A poet like Sappho, living century ago in Greece, her voice may resonate with a young Japanese girl or even a girl who is feeling very frustrated by her circumstances in one of the northern Indian states, whose voice is searching something. So I think it looks for a search, but it looks for different registers of voices. You can be loud, you can be this thing. But the structure of the narrative, which you only get by reading. So it's the more you read, the more stories you have read and absorbed, the more you can learn from other people who have wrestled with words. And you can then tell your story simply and effectively, amazing, without showing off.
Yeah.
Because you've learned how to do it.
And you do it in your own way. You get inspiration from, you know, other people.
But, you know, you have to understand how to make the reader share your story. Often when we write our own stories, we tend to try to show off a little or boast a little. No, you have to draw the reader in.
Right. Since we're talking about, you know, people potentially writing, I'm curious to hear your perspective and your advice to aspiring authors. You know, I think most people do think, you know, especially people who read, who observe about the world, they think they have something to tell. And कई लोग बोलते हैं मेरे को कभी बुक लिखनी है, but वो को नहीं पाता है. What's your suggestion?
Okay, so I'll give you my. I mean, I come from a family of writers. My daughter was a very famous editor and a publisher. My Merugo play. My other daughter, Shivani, has written a brilliant first novel and she'll do many more. I have cousins who are famous writers.
Up to the family.
Once I thought, I mean, so many cousins who are writers. We could just have a family film festival. I mean, family literary festival. But they're all very different voices. But my advice, which I'm giving to any writer, would-be writer who's watching, this is the advice I give, standard advice. Don't be afraid to begin. And most people waste their time beginning with the perfect beginning. Biggest waste of time. Just begin. Right. Remembering that it's only a holding structure. It's a scaffolding.
Yeah.
And as you progress, you can always go back.
Yeah.
Dismantle that. Most people, you know, you waste your time on that perfect beginning. Then you say, now what?
Yeah.
Just enter the story. Begin telling it. When you reach the end, go back to the beginning. You may need to completely scrap. Don't be afraid of throwing away. And you may tell this. You may be in a better position later to tell about the beginning.
Right.
And the second thing is, there's a time when you can't force yourself to write. That's a time when you're processing it, when it is brewing inside you.
Yeah.
Once that has happened, just, and that time, take notes and all. But when you're in sort of synchronicity, you'll pick it up. And now research is so much easier, especially with AI and things, so many things.
Right.
But just after that, stick to it.
Right.
Stick to it, even if you're writing badly. Write your 200, 300, 400, 500 words a day, whatever is the minimum you think you can fit into your very busy day. Because, you know, people will say, I'm going away to a mountainside to write. It doesn't always work. Great writers can write anywhere. Because they have to empty out their own heads and be quiet.
Right.
This is my advice.
God, it's good. You know, I think I remember reading somewhere that you become painter by painting. And I think what you mentioned, for 10 years you were writing relentlessly, irrespective of the commercial outcome or the
Because of failure.
Right. But you kept getting better in that process and, you know,
and learning from what I was doing wrong. Because if the market wasn't taking it, clearly I was writing something not authentic or not right.
I'll be remiss if I don't ask you about non-fiction, because that's something I've read a lot. I've written, you know, a couple of non-fiction books, writing my third one. And I've seen also last maybe, I don't know, 2 or 3 decades, non-fiction also has moved a lot. Now, you know, people like Siddharth Mukherjee, right? You know, although he writes about science, but his, like, it's as literary, you know, it's he only tells stories. You know, Atul Gawande, you know, other, you know, really good non-fiction, and, you know, Malcolm Gladwell and so on. In your opinion, how is non-fiction moved? And also, where is the Indian non-fiction going? Because some of these non-fiction you pick up, they are like, they're literally, you can't put them down. You know, these people write this is so well.
But first of all, I have a quarrel with the word non-fiction.
Gotcha.
It's such an awkward word. What is fiction? And non-fiction is like non-veg. It's a very, it's a very vague word, non-fiction.
Correct. It's like opposite of something as opposed to what it is. Yeah.
Actually, I would rather call it narrative documentary. I mean, sounds more boring than non-fiction, but, you know, you go to a library shelf, non-fiction could be anything.
Yeah.
The whole of the world, hopefully we are not living in a fictional world. So everything around us is non-fiction.
I would love that. I think I like that. And as a, somebody who's in JLF, if anyone can change this, you know, phrasing you can, you know. Yeah, so yeah,
we are sitting
narrative documentary.
This is what we are doing is non-fiction.
That's right. That's
because
right.
I hope it is
which
non-fiction.
Is narrative documentary from here on.
Yeah, it's a narrative documentary, and the harshest, strongest truths, as they say, truth is stranger than fiction. So fiction is very important for telling the truth, yeah. But narrative documentary teaches us about our world, and that's why all those aspiring writers, if they are not trying to write the greatest love story in the world or the greatest tragedy in the world, we know the lived details of their lives. And through the centuries, when we read books, the lived details of their lives are not that different. They may be eating differently, they may be, but the hopes, fears, aspirations of the human race, more or less the same. But the material life is best recorded. And we can learn from, if we treat language as an evolutionary tool, and if we treat books as a part of our evolutionary library, then those are the most important books ever written, are what we decided not to call not non-fiction, but, you know, these are the books that document and we can learn from them. If biographies or the history of science itself is so fascinating, or as you said, Siddharth Mukherjee, and that's the combination of imaginative narrative or creative writing or creative fiction and nonfiction, what we said. I think it's part of the same seamless writing.
I want to ask you about where do you think Indian new literary scene is in the last couple of decades, you know, having watched it so closely from JLF, where do you think we are in terms of, you know, what's getting better, what can get better in the coming years, you know, where are we headed with the, or just overall, you know, producing quality literature in the country across all these languages?
You know, one of the things that worries me is the divide between Hindi speakers and English speakers. Because Hindi speakers suffer a natural disadvantage unless they are fluent in both. But that is changing because the politics is changing. So if you are good at Hindi, it's a great tool. But if you are studying in Hindi, where are the social sciences books? I mean, the libraries of fiction and poetry, they are there. But the knowledge libraries are lacking. I think that's a major thing. And many publishers I know have tried to fill that gap by translating. But, you know, even the translation process is difficult because the vocabulary is difficult. And whether it is in medicine or in science, if you're going to learn the Hindi language, a word for something, then you Silicon Valley mein kaise samjhaoge what you were trying to say. So the vocabulary for knowledge learning should be able to take in vocabulary from other languages which have become accepted practice. Hmm. I don't know, something like...
But what is your take on this whole idea of English, which, you know, we...
I think English belongs to us. Hmm. But let's not be too easy and too lazy.
Right.
We should discover its own rhythms of English. And one fear I have, because Hindi is a beautiful language, but we forget that it's maybe one of the youngest English language, one of the youngest Indian languages. Oh, kahi, Awadhi, wah, wah, se, Urdu, ye sab milke, aaj ke Hindi bane. And it is a beautiful language. The more I read, the more I appreciate it. It is also one of the most spoken languages in the world. It's the third most spoken language, I think. And Chinese and English, of course. Chinese, Spanish, fourth could be Hindi. But if you take Hindi, Hindustani and Urdu together, as a spoken language, it could be one of the most spoken languages in the world. And what a wealth of literature. But. Abhi, beautiful writing is happening in Hindi. But, you know, the power structure is still tilted towards English. And a lot of brilliant Hindi writers feel more validated once they've been translated into English. And I understand that that sense. But if you read the same Hindi literature in English, it doesn't have the same resonance.
So
it has sorted itself out.
But what do you think? Challenge kahan par hai? We obviously have incredible heritage and it's an extremely rich language. And you're saying that people are writing amazing books in Hindi and other regional languages now. बट डिस्ट्रीब्यूशन में प्रॉब्लम है, रीडरशिप में
नहीं, नहीं रीडरशिप है, डिस्ट्रीब्यूशन है, बहुत अच्छा है. इंडियन पब्लिशिंग इज डूइंग वेल, इंडियन राइटिंग इन ऑल द लैंग्वेजेस, मलयालम,
राइट,
बांग्ला, एवरीवेयर. Bangla is the sixth most spoken language in the world. More people speak French than Bangla. And what literary output? I mean, every language in India, Tamil is the oldest language. And yet, it is the most modern language. So, all the languages, what they say, many languages, one literature, it's happening.
Right.
But that you the challenge is because the process has its own flow, its own bahav.
And also,
intervene karke kuch nahi hoga.
And Maybe translation is one. Let's say someone writes an amazing book in Bangla, but me as a Hindi or English reader will never have access to that. So probably.
No, so more and more people are supporting literary translation.
Okay.
Because literary translation is different from technical translation.
Okay, आप समझाइए मेरे को मतलब.
Technical translation है उसको हमको पता है कि ये जो है this is cut and dried.
ठीक है.
And the other technical translation has to be as cut and dried, right, as clear. But if you are translating a novel or a poem, then the imaginative world and the cultural cues have to be explained. Ab aap kahe usne dal bhat khaya, it's a completely ya uska man dal bhat khane ko ho raha tha. If you say he wanted to eat lentils and rice, it's not the same thing, because the cultural, you'd have to say then that he thought back to his mother's cooking and the food she used to make, the softness of the dal, the flavor of the rice. I say, usko context. So that contexting. And I think technology is the answer. I think increasingly it's going to, not in my lifetime, but increasingly it's going to be easier and easier to do literary translation, which is intuitive.
Got it. But overall volume of, the both quality and quantity of the literary work we are producing as a country is growing.
Is good.
Are there more younger authors are coming?
Yes, but there are problems. Cost of paper is a problem. Cost of printing ink is a problem. Distribution channels are a problem. That's why in the Jaipur Literature Festival, we have this segment called the Jaipur Bookmark, which tries to bring the international publishing community and the Indian publishing community together to address these problems. GST on publishers is a problem. So all these things, they will get sorted out, but there are a lot of challenges to publish.
How difficult is it to make a living as an author?
Impossible.
Impossible.
They say you can make a fortune, but not a living.
Okay, fair. So you are one of those few where you kind of become a best-selling author or something, and maybe
otherwise, many people do find very rewarding lives by having a steady source of income.
Yeah.
I'm trying to say writing is not a steady source of income. So they, not at least if you're trying to write what your heart says, what your heart dictates. Right. So many people do keep a balance between their working life and their writing life, and it is not impossible.
Right.
It is, in fact. Otherwise, a lot of people who say, now I'm going to give up everything and only write.
Yeah.
I can promise you they'll spend half the day chewing their pencils or fiddling with their thing.
Yeah.
Because structure is important. And if your mind is roaming all the time, then when you focus, you can write.
But even some of the probably most prolific authors around the world, they probably write for 3-4 hours because you also need to give your brain space to think
absolutely.
Of other things. Anyway. Right. So I think that's probably a good balance. You write for 1 or 2 hours a day.
Yes.
But probably you need to have any tips on what kind of, most people can't go to mountain or, rent a cabin somewhere, in jungle, right? You have to write, any tips about the how to set up your environment so you feel inspired?
You need a quiet space. That quiet space is as much up to you to create that quiet space. To find that spot in your house. And this is a very funny confession, but I can only write lying in a bed under the rosai. That's my...
Even in summers?
Even in summers. Patri rasai, air conditioner. Aise likha jata hai, which is very bad for posture. That's why I find it not easier to write on the... But, there are some spots where I can sit down and... So you have to... Your mind and body has to flow. I used to write with a pen and a pencil and all that. I find I used to find at that time that the keyboard connection... And the connection to the mind wasn't running so smoothly. But we are a species, we evolve. I think my fingertip keyboard connection with my mind is now sharper. And sometimes I find it easier to write straight on the keyboard.
Yeah.
But that space has to be in your head.
Yeah.
I never knew this earlier.
Yeah, and if you change the space, something changes in your brain as well? Or?
No, because you've got to find that space which you can, I think. Everybody is different, I'm sure.
Right.
But I realized this many years ago when I went, for some very complicated reason, which I won't go into now, I went for a two-day trip with Khushwant Singh, the great writer, who was a great friend of mine, a very prolific writer. And we went to the heart of Gujarat and came back. And we were sitting in the airport. And, you know, he was so popular with the public. And we were sitting in Ahmedabad airport. I was just sitting around looking at things, flight kab shuru hogi. He said, okay, Namita, now I'm switching off. And he began writing his column. He had a yellow pad. He said, "I have to send in my column tomorrow. I'm writing it." And people were coming. Khushwant Singh, Sardarji, they were coming, you know. There were lots of people around us. He just ignored them, just kept on writing. And I said, if this person can just sit in the airport with all these people praising him, this thinging him, but he just went, he finished it. And then he was polite and he said, "Ya Rabini," and all that. But I realized then that this pose that I can't write. But I'm sure different people have different nervous systems. Maybe he just could do it. Maybe some people need to be alone. But Jane Austen did write in a crowded family. I jab likhna padta hai, jab wo ubhar raha hota hai andar se, you need the space in your mind.
Mm. So Namita, you got involved with the world of literature at a very early stage, and you kind of stayed with it, you know, through various things. You know, your magazine, 23 books, you know, building Jaipur Lit Fest, you know, with along with your co-founders, this Kitab Nama show on the Doordarshan, which also did really well. Like, if you zoom out, you know, this close association with the world of literature as a writer, festival organizer, probably working with lots and lots of authors. You might have seen someone who's starting out as a young author and 10 years down the line maybe made a fortune.
Ahead of me.
Right? Just zoom out, you know. What does it all mean to you, and how this whole, you know, this such a deep lifelong immersion in the world of literature does this mean for you?
See, I think you realize the value of words, but also the futility of you. There's a futility in words, I think. What I've come to learn at this age, I'm 68, I've learned that words, you can say a lot, but silence can say more. Non-verbal communication at its best, and even telepathy exists. But telepathy is a big scientific word, but people don't need words to talk. And even nowadays, everybody is analyzing body language. But analyzing body language, anyway, then people will pose and... Just when two people sit together, there is so much they can say to each other without words, which is, I'm not devaluing.
Of course. Now, this is reminding me of this, I really like this quote, I don't know who it's attributed to, is, don't open your mouth unless you can improve upon silence.
But I'm a chatterer, but big mouth. But silence and listening to what the other person is trying to say, you know, sometimes the biggest chatterboxes are actually the most shy people. But
in the right environment. You know.
So I don't know. I mean, I have no gyan to give on anything. That's what I know.
But something has, you know, see, it's not easy to stay with something for such a long period of time, you know, over 4 decades, nearing 5 decades, right? There must be some, and obviously you also come from family of a literary tradition and a lot of literature all around you. But personally, like, what do you think you reflect on? You know, what has kept you, like, so committed to, you know, this whole
demand? Must be some brain configuration. Kuch nahi to hum telephone directory padhne lag jate the pehle. It's, I don't know what it is, but... It's about words and the magic of words.
Right.
And I'm trying to move away from that because everything is not about words.
Right. Fair.
So, because you can get over-invested in words.
Correct.
So, I don't know what I'm searching. I don't know where I'm looking. But I know my greatest teachers have been other people's words.
Right.
That
got it.
Is it.
Understood. And you still have, you know, many books inside you. I think you... mentioned a few ideas already.
Panch,
right? So yeah, I think we'll, and also the folk tales of Himalayas also.
That's one of the five.
One of the five, right? So I think, Namita, I want to just really, you know, take time to thank you, not only for taking time for this podcast, but I think everything you've done for the world of literature, I think, I genuinely think...
That sounds very presumptuous. I should say everything that the world of literature has done for me, I can thank for that.
Certainly, it's probably mutual.
And so for all of us, literature has given you, given me, yourself as the author of two books. Right. I hope and trust you're working on your third.
Done with the draft of third, and I have fourth at least idea in mind.
Very nice.
So mere ko bhi likhte rehna hai.
Bilkul.
Achha bura, time will tell.
Haan.
But maza to aata hai likhne mein. Woh to I'll continue. No, but I genuinely want to just, you know, see, I think I'm very committed to JLF, you know, in my head. Like, I want to come, you know, in January last week, I want to be in Jaipur. It's really such a happy place. You know, it's also like full, you know, the cultural heritage of India comes alive. It's a melting pot of so many ideas. It's a great place for inspiration. And the young energy of India is like, you can see, I think we'll definitely add, you know, some clips from the festival in this. And I think one of my takeaways, I'm going to read at least two of your book for sure. I'm very curious now. I mean, you have such a fascinating, you know, history and story, and, you know, I can't wait to read. So thank you so much for taking the time for this.
Thank you, Mukesh, for all the things you are invested in.
Thank you.
In your mind, in your heart.
Right. Excellent. At Sparks, we aim to bring to you stories of exponential impact. We share in-depth analysis of what goes behind success stories. If you find our conversations interesting, you can join us by subscribing to our YouTube channel. You can also listen to Sparks on Spotify, Apple Podcast, or any other audio platform of your choice. If you have any suggestions on who we should invite or what topics we need to cover, just let us know in the comments. We are always listening, looking for ways to improve, and keep getting better as we go along.